Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, May 30th, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimball of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll have the first of a three-part interview with Purdue agricultural economist Chris Hurt. He explores the changing landscape of corn and soybean demand and how agricultural commodities for energy will require new marketing strategies. And the Farm Bureau will be by with a commentary. And Don Day will have the latest in agricultural weather. It's all on your Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this. July wheat in Kansas City, 502 down 4. September, 508 and 3 quarters, down 5 and a quarter. At the Chicago Board of Trade, July wheat, 412 down 3 and a half. September, 426 down 3. December, 443 and a quarter, down 3. July corn, 254 and a half, up a half. September, 265 and three quarters, up three quarters. December, 279 and three quarters, up three quarters. March, 290 and a half, up one. July beans, 583 and a half, up one. August, 590 and a quarter, up one and a quarter. September, 596 and three quarters, up three quarters. November, 608 and three quarters, up three quarters. July soybean meal, 171.90 down 140. July soybean oil, 25.40 up 29. At the Merck, August feeders, 109.42 and a half up 67 and a half. June live cattle, 80.05 up 65. June lean hogs, 67.70 up 92 and one half. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimball of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
What do we make of the activity in the wheat pit? A double-digit swing. First, strong support to the upside this morning, and then a close to the downside.
Well, from a technical perspective, a sort of an outside-down day, which is relatively negative, and it sort of puts the market in a position to go ahead and challenge or test last Thursday's lows. I imagine there's some sell stops accumulating there, and if they would go ahead and take out those lows there, that would set the stage maybe for some type of a correction. You can argue that we have a head and shoulders top, per se. So I'd imagine that this thing could see some pretty good long liquidation here if we violate the recent lows, along with the momentum indicators, the stochastics and so forth have sort of rolled over in here. It's going to take some type of fundamental support to give them reason to come back and sort of buy the market, being the trade's fairly well loaded up to the long side in here, and that just increases the risk to the downside, especially going to harvest and as bullish as the market is.
Did the trade give any reason for the sell-off other than the technical aspects?
Well, yeah. The forecast is a little cooler than what they were looking for. Profit-taking, you know, sort of failed to stay above the previous day's highs. We saw Australia sort of confirm that they finalized a deal or a sale to Iraq for up to 350,000 tons of wheat. U.S. being missed out. Look at India, for example, and some of these other countries skipping the U.S. Japan also skipped this weekly tender. in through here to here. So when you look at U.S. prices versus world prices, we're probably a little bit overvalued in through here. And so I think it's this combination of the technicals and some of the fundamental news coming all together here to get put us in a position to correct here for a while.
Take me a look over in Kansas City, that July chart, for example. We've seen sort of the beginning of a pennant formation there.
Well, you can read it several different ways. It could be, also counts the night session or not. But the Chicago was the one that recorded the outside down day. The Kansas City did record a hook reversal, made a new high and close below the previous day's session's close. If we sort of fail to hold here, we could go on down to the 20-day moving average. Some of these hedge fund guys have been sort of noted followers of the 20-day. I know there for a while they were following the 40- and 50-day moving averages, but I think the psychology shift to a shorter-term trading strategy where it gives them a little bit more buy and sell type of order activity.
Turn our attention to the corn market. December corn bounced up into that gap that was left over from 18 May, 19 May. That's 281 to 283 and three quarters. But it doesn't look like we could hold into that gap off the close. What does that bode for the rest of the week?
Well, it may suggest maybe near Friday's highs might catch it here for a little while. The key is in the D's is 78 area. If we can hold 78, we'll may consolidate a little bit. But still under the opinion, we're just going to continue to chop around here. You got commodity fund buying underneath the marketplace. You've got hedge pressure above the marketplace. And both of them's got a lot of backing. And it just tells me it's more of a sideways trading affair here, where I know it's easier said than done if you buy the dips and sell the rally. I think that's the main thing here over time. The ultimate maker will be probably a week or two from now as we start to focus a little bit more on weather. 6 to 10 days looking at normal temperatures, below normal precip. But warm temperatures and maybe a little less rain in some of these areas is welcome. There's a few dry pockets that's going to start to show some stress here in a few weeks. But weather is going to be the dominant factor as we move more into the first part of June.
Export inspection solid again today. Is USDA going to change its export estimates on its next go-round of reports?
Well, I don't know if they got enough ammunition there or not. Just looking at the weekly shipments here on Mondays, we're about 168 million bushels above last year's pace. I mean, the exports is fairly good. Probably will go another month. But the key is watching Asia. South Korea was in the market for 110,000 U.S. corn. And the significance of that is, as we start accumulating and picking up this Asian business, this suggests that China's backing off, and that suggests that down the road in here we can capture more of that Asian business, but not Chinese business in corn. And that's where the optimism is down the road, exports to China as we move through 2006 into 2007, along with the huge ethanol demand base we've built underneath the market. That's why we see the 07 contracts trading above $3.
In the soybeans, the DTN reports anyway, that soybean oil, crude oil, still has a symbiotic relationship. It's a relationship, Kurt, that I don't quite understand, given that we really haven't ramped up the soybean oil to diesel that much yet, but at least that's the way it was reported today.
Well, when you look at stocks and inventories and so forth, yeah, you question that. But the futures market, you're looking in the future and future demand and future use of it, and probably your bullishness in the energies would be soybean oil right now. We've fairly well ran crude oil up on world tightness, world demand. The Chinese continue to buy. We've talked about ethanol here for the last year. That's pretty well worn out. We've got people calling in every day wanting to buy stock in ADM and some of these companies that produce ethanol. And the biodiesel's the next one to go. And so I think you're starting to see longer-term traders position themselves in the bean oil as we slowly start to bring biodiesel online in through here. So from a long-term perspective, trader, investor, you know, there probably wouldn't be anything wrong for exploring the long side and the bean oil here at this 25-cent to 24-and-a-half area, with the idea that down the road in here, this bean oil could probably be up in the 45, 50-cent area down the road.
Thanks much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will be joining us for a look at agricultural weather. AM 580 has a listener comment line. Give us a call at area code 217-333-0853. Let us know how we're doing with our agricultural programming. Also, if you go on our website, willag.org, an opportunity for you to subscribe to our weekly Agricultural Outlook letter. More than 1,700 of you have taken advantage of that. Why don't you do so, too, at willag.org.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
In today's Listener Opinion Forum, Champaign County Farm Bureau's Amy Murray says, many Americans are unaware of the crucial role USDA plays in their lives.
Although it affects American citizens every day, do we really know exactly what the USDA does? The responsibilities of the United States Department of Agriculture, or the USDA, are many and widespread. The USDA leads the federal anti-hunger effort, is responsible for food safety, and is the steward for national forests and rangelands. It serves as our country's largest conservation agency. The 2007 Farm Bill quickly approaches, and there is a huge focus on the farm program portion of the USDA budget. But did you know that the Farm Bill includes funding for all USDA responsibilities and not just farm programs? The Farm Bill is the major agricultural legislation in the United States, which outlines provisions on commodity programs, trade, conservation, credit, agricultural research, food stamps, and marketing. In fact, funding for farm programs is not even the largest portion of the budget. Additionally, the Farm Bill is only 0.5% of the United States budget, one half of 1%. Which is significantly smaller than any other portion of the national budget. Often, the strong emphasis put on the funding for farm programs distorts the public perception of its actual amount. United States farm policy is important to national security, ensuring a safe and abundant and affordable food supply, and vital to a strong rural and urban community, with the food and fiber industry creating more than 25 million jobs, producing about $3.5 trillion in output, and accounting for 15% of the United States gross domestic product. Another USDA responsibility is to ensure that there are open markets for United States agricultural products. According to the United States Agricultural Secretary and the USDA fiscal 2006 forecast, for all agricultural exports, it is a record $64.5 billion, which is a $2.1 billion increase from the fiscal year 2005. The major factors affecting the direction of the forecast for this year are the increased unit values of wheat and rice and the decrease in soybean shipments due to the competition from Brazil. And agricultural exports alone brought in $62.939 billion for the United States, which is extremely beneficial to the economy. Don't forget that America has its roots in the agriculture industry, and it doesn't stop giving back to the economy. For the Champaign County Farm Bureau, I'm Amy Murray.
Amy Murray's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of the station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This past week, Purdue University agricultural economist Chris Hurt analyzed the new paradigm that's being created by the use of corn and soybeans as energy sources, and how the growing demand from the energy sector for agricultural commodities will impact the livestock industry. We'll air the interview in three parts, today, Thursday, and Friday. In part one, Todd Gleason explores the basic issues with Hurt.
Tell me about the article you've written. It's titled Agriculture's Drive and Dine Menu. It was released through the FarmDoc website and I suppose at Purdue as well this past May 22nd.
Well, obviously, agriculture is being asked to make a contribution to the energy industry. We're not going to solve the problems for the energy industry, but we know that the biofuels and renewable fuels standards have been set already and that agriculture is being asked to make a contribution. I think the recognition is that as we have larger and larger amounts of our corn that move towards fuel, that means that there will be competition for some of the current uses. And one of those current uses, obviously, is what is related to the dining side, and that dining side is our food uses. So I think the challenges as we look at, we already are the dining side, we are the food industry as represented by agriculture. We're now going to be also in the fuel business. So these are really new challenges for us, new challenges to both meet those demands, and I think our research base in agricultural research is going to be asked to find higher yielding crops to certainly move towards the cellulose-based fuel, ethanol from cellulose in the future. And depending on how far we go in that contribution that agriculture can make towards the fuel side or the driving side, then that will largely determine just how much change there is in agriculture. Is this going to be something we look back on and say, yes, we did see some changes, but they weren't dramatic? Or is this really going to be a dramatic shift in U.S. agriculture that we look back on and say that was a revolution that we saw? Don't think we have the answer to that right now, but the exciting part and the exhilarating part for agriculture is that we have these new opportunities and finding that balance between how much goes to the driving side, that's the new fuel side of agriculture, and how much to our traditional food side also is going to be very interesting as we plot through the opportunities that come up in the next several years.
Can you outline for me historically how much the dining side had taken advantage of corn in the U.S.? What kind of percentage went to feed livestock?
Well, animals are the original value-adding aspect of our crop agriculture throughout the Midwest and the United States. We go back into the 1960s, and surprisingly to many people, we were almost 80% of all of our corn use in the United States as an average through that period was for feed use. Of course, we stop and think that only was 20% for all other uses, including all of our food uses, all industrial uses, and remember, exports would have been in that also. Of course, the growth of the export market in the 1970s and that boom period that we went through was a major new demand factor for agriculture. I think we can see some parallels right now to the growth in the demand for at least one product, and that is corn, could be as large in this ethanol side of our industry, the fuel side, as what the export growth was in the 1970s for exports of corn and other products. But then the growth of high fructose corn syrup, the industrial side of corn usage, really growing in the 80s and particularly the 1990s, and now ethanol. So USDA current numbers for the 2006 crop, we're not going to be at 80% or 70% corn use or even 60. We'll be down to 51% of our use of corn, total use of corn, would be in the animal sector. So that traditional value-adding sector certainly has diminished in terms of its percentage. It's still the majority. And I think one of the issues for the livestock and animal sector is how much competition is there going to be for this corn if the ethanol industry really grows as the prospects right now seem to suggest in the next several years?
Should poultry, hog, and beef producers be fearful of the price of corn?
Well, they already are fearful of that direction. We talk to particularly those not only in the Midwest, but that Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan supply the primary corn supplies into the eastern corn animal demand markets, the Delmarva area for the poultry market, the North Carolina hog industry, and then all of the broiler, turkey, and egg production throughout from the Carolinas on into Georgia, even Alabama and Mississippi. When I say all, a substantial amount of that corn comes out of our states. So they are concerned. What is the direction going to be? I think we do know that monogastrics, the hogs and the poultry, tend to not get as much value out of the distiller's dried grains as what the cattle do. The inclusion rates or the amount of we can put into those rations is more like 8, 10, 12%, where in the cattle rations we can substitute maybe 20, 25% distiller's dried grains. So there is concern already how much will corn prices go up, and of course that'll be good news for our crop producers in the Midwest. But the animal industry is really asking the questions. How much will corn prices go up, and can we get value back and hopefully sufficient value out of the distiller's dried grains as a low-price feed product to offset the higher corn price? I think our initial analysis is that for the hog sector as well as the poultry sector, it's not likely that with such small inclusion rates, the higher corn price will not be offset by gains on the cheaper feed prices from the distiller's dried grains. Now, a lot of work still has to be done on that. So I think there are these issues. They are the challenges that we are beginning to come into focus, the drive and dine menu, the food-fuel balance. Where will that be, especially if we see ethanol become a much larger percentage? And that's not so much this 06 crop. Our current estimates are we're going to go up to 21% of our production will be ethanol use in the 06 crop. And that's phenomenal, considering 3 years ago, the 03 crop, we were about 11% usage going to ethanol. I think the real crunch, then supply crunch, comes with if we continue to grow the ethanol demand for corn in 07. With current growth rates, we'd be pushing up towards the high 2 billion, almost 3 billion bushels of corn usage for ethanol in the 07 crop, and I'm projecting that out around 25 to 26% of all of our corn usage. So the question obviously becomes, when do we have such a big demand growth that our supply response struggles to keep up? And, of course, that's when we see substantially higher prices, and we're already seeing that in terms of seeing D07 corn $3 plus on the future side. I think the recognition in the marketplace is already out there that we're working through our surpluses of corn in the 06 crop, and, boy, all bets are off on 07 because maybe we'll see demand outpacing our ability to supply, and that would be some very high prices.
Purdue University agricultural economist Chris Hurt. He spoke with Todd Gleason. We'll air part two of the interview on Thursday. If you want to look at Chris Hurt's article, go to farm.uiuc.edu and click on the Marketing and Outlook link.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. An autopsy is scheduled for this afternoon on a man reportedly shot by Danville police overnight at the city's Fair Oaks public housing complex. Vermilion County and State Police are investigating the death of 27-year-old Aaron Moss of Danville. Press reports indicate the man was shot by a Danville police officer, but Danville police have not confirmed that. An appeals court in Chicago has refused to overturn the conviction for white supremacist Matthew Hale. A three-judge panel of the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals today refused to overturn Hale's 2004 conviction for trying to solicit the murder of a federal judge and also turned down a request to reduce his 40-year prison sentence. A statewide series of public forums on bird flu wraps up with a presentation tonight at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. U of I veterinary medicine professor John Herman, who will be a panelist on the forum, says they'll discuss the potential of bird flu being spread by human-to-human contact. And he says they'll discuss preventive measures that people can take on their own. Herman says that's important because public confidence in the government's ability to control a bird flu outbreak is low. The Bird Flu Forum begins at 7 tonight at the Basic Sciences Building on South Lincoln Avenue at the U of I campus in Urbana. The program that helps low-income Illinoisans keep their utilities from getting shut off is getting an additional $5.2 million. Governor Blagojevich signed a bill last night providing additional funding for the Supplemental Low-Income Energy Assistance Fund for the LIHEAP program. That means the program will be able to give benefits of up to $100 to thousands of households. The bill's Senate sponsor, Senator Kwame Raoul, says the additional funding is especially important because energy costs continue to climb. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolandagrienergy.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
Looks like as I look at my radar screen, pockets of scattered showers across the Corn Belt this afternoon.
That's right, and this is a pattern. Warm temperatures and occasional scattered shower and thunderstorm activity is something that we're going to see plenty of over the next several days, probably going through the next couple of weeks. Is a very, let's say, early summer, a typical early summer pattern is going to be developing. This is going to mean really good news, the combination of warm temperature readings, temperatures that will be at normal, maybe a little bit above, and occasional chances of showers and thunderstorms to keep us from getting too dry. The cool weather we had over the last couple of weeks is really going to transition now to more of a seasonal one across most of the Midwest and Corn Belt.
Kansas, southern Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, those areas most likely to see something close to 100% showers?
I would have to say those are the areas that are going to do best, although if you add up the next week to 10 days, the shower activity will cover most of the Corn Belt, but favoring some of those northern and western areas early on.
How about the southwestern half of the Corn Belt? Might they see some net evaporation?
Well, there's going to be a little bit of that there. Now, the warmer temperatures, that's certainly going to be a concern. But what we will see is a lot of small weather disturbances coming out of the Plain States. And these are systems that you have to track almost on a daily basis. While they're going to be a little bit drier in those areas, I think they'll probably have some chances of rain as well.
What's the situation down in the Delta?
Well, down in the Delta, they are going to be warmer and drier. There's not going to be quite as much activity in those areas as precipitation is going to be focused a little bit further north. Temperatures pretty warm. In fact, very warm summer-like temperatures will be found over most of the U.S. Only the Pacific Northwest is going to be a little cooler than normal.
Lots of heat in the hard red winter wheat area over the weekend. Are they in line for any relief?
They got some last night and early this morning. Some shower and thunderstorm activity did develop over some areas of the driest parts of western and southwest Kansas, and for the next three nights, Kansas, portions of Nebraska, portions of the Texas and Oklahoma panhandles will have some chances of rain, as well as temperatures that won't be as hot.
I was looking at China totals for rainfall today, and I couldn't believe I saw some of the numbers. I did see rainfall in excess of 7 inches in some parts, with more than 16 inches along the coast.
That's right, and there's more coming. In fact, the trend right now for China will be for temperatures cooler than normal and some of these rains, very heavy rains that continue, especially in the central, southern, and eastern areas, and as you mentioned, along the coast. Rainfall is forecasted to continue in those areas for another 7 to 10 days.
What does that imply to crops like, rice and sugarcane?
Well, certainly it's going to be an issue if it keeps going at this rate. We're going to have too much of a good thing there.
What places are you keeping an eye on globally?
Well, if we go over to Europe, we find that Western Europe is going to be getting a little bit on the warm side and also drier, especially the central and western areas of Europe. Eastern Europe is going to fare a little bit better with better chances of moisture, especially in the western areas of Russia.
Thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And Don joins us every Tuesday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.